It's time for Real Money with David Holland. Because David isn't just a radio personality, but also provides financial advice to clients, we must pause for a word from our compliance department.
David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, an investment advisory firm registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share common ownership under Holland Financial. The views and advice expressed by David Holland and guests are general in nature. No statements or opinions given during this radio program are to be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not to be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after a thorough analysis of an individual situation. An engagement of services to be offered are only in states where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. And now for the man who doesn't preach about cutting up credit cards, doesn't waste your time talking about which razor blades to buy, won't tell you to sell everything you own and buy gold, or ever use big words to impress you and talk over your head. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, David Holland.
All right, you caught me. I was talking about my dogs. I have two schnauzers, and one of them, just his name's Buddy, and he just loves to jump in my lap. And I was telling Scott how he likes Scotch whiskey too. And Scott's reply was,
"Who doesn't?
Who doesn't? Nobody I know, but I'm sure there are." Well, welcome to the program where we're taking all matters seriously, but you know, not everything's super serious. So we're gonna get to some important stuff. Let's talk about the market.
The fastest 5 minutes in finance with Scott Connor.
Scott, do tell. Are we here? Here's the $1 million question, and I know you got a lot to cover.
Do I get $1 million if I get it right?
Yes.
Excellent.
Okay. If you can precisely tell us if and when we're going to get a correction on the market.
Well, we'll certainly get one. There's no question
about it. So it's a matter of time,
right?
Yeah,
the if is the easy part.
Okay. So the when, you know, if you've got the crystal ball.
I do think we'll see some weakness this summer.
Yeah.
I really do. I don't know that it'll be as dramatic as last year's, but I wouldn't be at all surprised to see a June swoon, something like that. I might as well throw a date at you, right? I can't lose.
Yeah, you know, you really can't. I mean, you know.
June 12th.
Okay. All right. Well, I think there's some interesting stuff going on. And when I say interesting, some things to be concerned about, which we'll get to in a minute. I know you've got some specific stuff to get to, but the unemployment numbers are really, that's going to now take, I think, more and more of a front burner focus as opposed to Europe.
Yeah, Friday's number is going to be a very, very, very important number. We did get, before Wednesday's trade, the ADP private number. Now, it's a very different number than the unemployment number for a couple of reasons. It reflects private job creation only. And I think the most important thing, two things that I think that are very important if you're considering it as a harbinger for Friday's number. First, it's not seasonally adjusted. So a lot of the jobs that have been created this year were created earlier in the season than they normally would be because of the warm weather that they had in the Northeast over the winter. So that adjusted the number. The other thing is that this year, that number just has not been an even remotely accurate predictor of the unemployment number. So it is less relevant than it was when there are higher levels of correlation.
Yet, there's still, there was the private job report showed that April had 119,000 jobs. It's still 119,000 jobs, but here's the thing, it's a lot less than what they expected.
Yeah, and that's the market really trades on expectations. We were looking for something significantly higher than that.
And there's no way we're going to get anywhere close to that $400,000 number you want to see.
No, no, no.
$400,000, but 400,000 people getting jobs a month. We're 25 cents on the dollar.
I'm normally very, very reticent to say, well, that just can't happen, but that just is not going to happen. We were looking for an expectation of about 175,000 jobs on the ADP number that we got on Wednesday. We got 119. Most economists for Friday's number are expecting about 168,000 jobs, which would keep the unemployment rate at 8.2. Won't surprise me even a little bit to see the unemployment rate tick up to 8.3.
You were thinking maybe 8.3.
Yeah. On the ADP report, if you break it up a little bit, it shows that large businesses, 500 employees or more, are adding basically nothing, 4,000 employees for the month. Small businesses, regarded as those having 50 or fewer workers, hired 58,000. So, you know, it's all coming from small businesses. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but big corporations have a lot of money and they're not putting it to work by hiring.
Well, that's a bad thing, but it's a good thing that small businesses are where the jobs are at because, first of all, it's a diversification. You know, small businesses, that's good. And you've got a lot of velocity of money. You got people spending money. The big companies, you know, they aren't opening their coffers up because they've been squeezing every other way they can. And they're investing in new plant and equipment, technology that lets them have one person do the job of four, robots. I mean, you know, it's all coming. And I think we're going to see this trend continue where we have a somewhat of a jobless recovery.
Well, I think the other side of that argument, which I'm not necessarily taking, but what I'm seeing in a lot of places is that the analysis is that employment numbers are generally lagging. They're not a long lag, but they're a lag. And if you look at things like, if you look at the survey numbers, like the ISM survey, the Chicago survey, the Philly Fed survey, just the pure survey numbers, not the statistic numbers, the sentiment for hiring going forward is really pretty strong. Sentiment in manufacturing hiring, in service hiring, all those sentiment numbers are pretty strong. Now, that doesn't translate to jobs, but it tells us that employers, although they're not hiring now, they do see their way to that going forward.
We'll take it however it comes.
Yeah, we'll see. But Wednesday's trade was not a bad trade. NASDAQ up 9 at 3,059. Dow down 11 at the close at 13,268. It was a lot worse than that throughout the day. S&P down 3.5 at 1402, so we held that 1400 level. Gold just down a little bit, down 8 at 1654. Oil about flat at 105, and tens at 192.
Be proud of me, Scott. I'm actually starting to pay attention to your S&P numbers.
I that's just terrific.
You know, because the joke is that you know, we all look at those headline Dow numbers. What did the Dow do today? What, when people say what did the market do today, they're talking about the Dow most of the time, and it's really not a good reflection of the overall market. It's large companies and these mega caps, and even some of them are not, but they're still in there. And but as we've talked about, the S&P 500 gives you a much broader market.
Yep, and I have a fair number of corporate pieces of news that I want to tell you about when we get back.
All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read, you'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
Now it's time for a breakdown from Finglish to English.
We're back, and we're breaking it down as usual. Scott, I know you've got some interesting corporate news.
Yeah, I want to give you one more piece of economic data that came out on Wednesday. Factory orders, pretty significant decline in factory orders. Biggest decline we've had in 3 years. So not such great news on factory orders there. The Commerce Department said orders for manufacturers good dropped 1.5% after being revised to 1.1% for February.
What's going on there? What do you think it is?
You know, manufacturing data is so mixed right now. You get one report that's terrific. The ISM that we had just the day before was really quite good. And then this one, we get factory orders from the Commerce Department. So it's very, very, very mixed. There are no straight lines. You know, there's no straight solid lines from one thing to the next. And when you go through these sort of pockets of airlessness, then things are going to come in like that.
Do you think this is a, and again, this is always the question where we're going through a period like this, is there a new paradigm? Is this a new realities of investing, or are we going through we've seen something like this in the past? I mean, has it always been?
I never believe in the it's different this time.
Right. Okay.
The times that it's different, you know, when people were saying in 2000, well, it's different this time. It's a new economy. It's not really. And the market proved that, you know,
that's,
it was different
for
a little
while.
That's
back when people were saying, hey, the Dow went to 10,000, so the NASDAQ can too.
Right. And the Dow's going to go to 20,000 or 100,000. Right. It was different, but it didn't stay different for very long, did it?
No,
so,
it didn't.
I don't think we're really looking at anything particularly earth shattering here. It's just we're still trying to come out of a recovery. It's been a very, very, very slow recovery, and we need more jobs. Jobs solves everything. But we're still in the middle of earnings season. Earnings season continues to be very, very, very good. Every time I look at the number, they're actually getting better. So far, of all the earnings growth that have been reported for the S&P 500, earnings have grown an average of 7.3%. Now, it was just a couple of days ago I gave you that number, and it was 7.0%. So the more people, the more companies that report, the better the number is getting. We have about 350 of the S&P 500 companies who have reported up to now. 70% have beaten their expectations, which is good. It's normally 62, 63, something like that. So that's really good news. Estimates for next quarter's growth rate right now, based on the analyst community, is 9.4%, which I think they'll have to revise that down.
So they're accelerating the net number.
Yeah, I think they'll have to revise
that
down.
And that's a quarter over quarter, right?
That's over the previous year.
Okay.
The quarter of the previous year. But it's still, from a sentiment standpoint, which we just talked about, there's a lot of positive sentiment out there.
But just not quite the jobs for the large companies.
Yeah, but keep in mind that, I mean, with positive sentiment has come really a pretty good market this year. So
I'm not complaining about that. I just want to make sure it's going to sustain. And you know, if this job numbers keep coming out and they're not that good, then eventually, you know, the stock market and the people that are investing are saying, hey, wait a minute.
Except that if the jobs numbers don't come in very good and inflation stays tame, then everybody thinks the Fed is going to bail us out again.
Okay.
So there's that's what they call the Bernanke put.
Okay.
Earnings news, big media day on Wednesday. Comcast announced earnings. They beat earnings pretty handily. Time Warner beat earnings pretty handily. Had some fairly important financial earnings announcements. MasterCard and Visa have really had phenomenal several years in a row here.
What's driving all that, you think? Just economic recovery?
Well,
it's, more
we're
transactions.
Going more and more to cashless, I think. I think that's it more than anything.
Did you see the article? There was an article talking about what we would save if we got away from having to deal with dollar bills and we went to dollar coins.
No, I didn't see that.
Oh, yeah. There's a report out that talked about the savings could be rather substantial, but if we go this path of the credit cards for everything, you know, you might not need,
yeah,
you know, need much bills
plus
at
I'd
all.
Hate to give up my Foldy too. Looking ahead at the economy, Thursday brings us the weekly jobless claims number, also earnings from GM, Kraft, and AIG. Friday, we get the big payroll number and earnings from your buddy, Berkshire Hathaway. So that
right.
should be fun. In a little bit deeper corporate news, Facebook's roadshow starts on Monday. IPO set for May 18th.
You see they're doing something with including organ donor capabilities of putting that in there.
Yeah.
So what is that? You go, you know, something happens to you and they go over and they check your Facebook and say, let me check his Facebook. Yep.
I guess so.
He's got a big heart up there. That means that he would want us to take it.
I'm not sure that's legally binding, but
yeah.
I'm still not on the Facebook, so I don't know.
You know, I was on it briefly. I was on there individually. We, of course, were on as a company. And we love Facebook for that, and we tweet and all, but when it comes to me personally, I went in and I did join Facebook, and I was on there for about, I was a member for about an hour, and I received like 100 invitations.
Yeah.
I said, I don't have time for this, so I went in and deleted my account, you know, anyway.
Well, the roadshow starts Monday, which basically means the executives go out and they say, hey, everybody, we're going public, and who wants to buy these shares before we trade out on the market? And then once they have all those shares sold, they IPO, which means it trades on the market starting May 18th. Now, that can always still adjust a day or two, but it's going to be a big IPO. That'll make
how many shares are they looking to sell?
They're trying to raise $10 billion, so they'll adjust the number of shares sold based on what the pricing is.
And what if they, any chance that they'll want to sell more, or is that?
They certainly could.
Yeah, they could come around and do a second offering?
They could even increase their target for this offering.
Okay.
If they have really, really heavy demand, they certainly could.
And everybody that's got the stock pre-IPO can sell it, including not just the people on the roadshow that say, I want it, but people that have the stock of the private company, can then they can sell.
Right, the employees and all that stuff. Now, they're discouraged from doing that, particularly the ones that buy on the roadshow, because it's investment banking relationships and stuff like that. But somebody's got to sell it.
Yeah, but if it was Zuckerberg, right? That's his name? Okay, well, if Zuckerberg paid you, you know, some stock for, you know, doing the logo or I don't know, tinting the windows or getting his cup of coffee one day, you know, if you got stock from that and you want to sell it, you can sell it.
Right. That's right.
Okay. All right. That's good to know. He hasn't had me do anything for him, so I don't have any stock laying around Facebook. But
yeah, I mean, I still haven't even signed up, so.
I mean, you'd know because it'd be in my portfolio and you'd be handling it. But
that's right. And that's the news on Facebook, and we should talk about our friend Aubrey McClendon.
Oh, we got to talk about Chesapeake. We're going to take a quick break. Ladies and gentlemen, you got to stay for this. This is just too much to, unbelievable is the term for this. Aubrey McClendon and Chesapeake Energy. Stay tuned.
Many people invest without ever knowing what they pay in investment fees. When was the last time you dropped your car off for service and told them to fix whatever they want without getting an estimate first? I'll bet never. Why treat your portfolio any different? Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
And we're back. No intro. Cutting Lisa back to only a couple intros a day.
She's sad about that.
Yeah, she is. Well, she'll come up with one that she'll do anyway. I know she will. Chesapeake Energy, we got to talk about that.
Chesapeake Energy had their earnings call, the analyst call on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Results have not been good, which should surprise no one. They're very, very heavily exposed to natural gas. So the earnings results were very, very bad. Shares were down about 13% on Wednesday's trade. That's one day's trade.
52-week low.
Yeah, credit ratings and stock analysts have all been cutting their outlook. They have a huge amount of debt. But their biggest problem really is, I think, a problem of
personality.
Yeah, a problem of personality, lack of corporate governorship, and really some real challenges from an ethical standpoint from their former chairman of the board, still CEO.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense to me.
Aubrey McClendon. Well, you know, he's the co-founder, so he still holds a lot of sway there. But we have talked about how Mr. McClendon had private ownership in some of the wells that Chesapeake was digging, and that was kind of confusing because he was using that as an asset to borrow money, and it turned out he was $1 billion of debt. Now, this is a guy who also had a margin call a couple of years ago and had to start selling off assets.
I saw that. He had to sell off a ridiculous amount, and it caused the stock to plunge.
It did, and there's a new revelation today that says that Mr. Aubrey was co-managing a hedge fund from 2004 to 2008 that was engaged in the business of trading energy commodities. Now, the commodity marketplace is significantly less regulated than the stock marketplace. So if you're a CEO of a company, you can't buy and trade your stock based on information that you have as an executive. But in the commodities market, you can. So here's a guy who basically could control a significant portion of the natural gas market.
5% is how much Chesapeake produces.
Yeah, that's a
big component.
That's enormous. So and at the same time, he's managing a hedge fund that can either go long or go short natural gas futures, which means they can bet on it going up or bet on it going down. But they control 5% of the market.
Yeah. No problem here, Scott. You know, there's all kinds of reports out that this hedge fund and the gentleman's involved with it, they can very easily segregate any proprietary or non-public information and not trade on that information. Come on now.
They probably could.
That's all sarcasm, ladies and gentlemen. It is the most ridiculous thing. I think, I won't say the most, but one of the most ridiculous things I've seen is this CEO running a hedge fund and betting with, without, against his own company.
Well, it was not.
He has clear inside information.
Yeah, and it was not uncommon for him to have one position with the company and an opposite position with the hedge fund. To make matters worse, in my mind, again, from a complete lack of governance on the part of the board, the hedge fund listed Chesapeake's headquarters as the mailing address.
Mm-hmm.
The hedge fund's staff accountant was an accountant who was simultaneously employed at Chesapeake, and the fund also earned McClendon in management fees from outside investors. So he was getting all this outside income that the board didn't know about.
This is starting to smell like Enron. It's starting to stink, and I don't get it. Oh, and the other thing is, you know, he doesn't disclose any of this. And then the traders involved with this, what's the name? Heritage is the name of the
Heritage,
hedge fund?
Heritage, yeah,
the
hedge fund.
Yeah, they say the position he took McClendon,
Aubrey McClendon.
Yeah, that always just did this on his, spare time, off hours. And the trader over at Heritage, running the hedge fund, said, talked to him all the time.
Yeah, sometimes exhaustive, he said, conversations.
So, where does one company stop and one company start? And there are big responsibilities that a publicly traded company and its executives or officers have to its shareholders. The SEC has been asked to comment. They won't comment. The board won't comment. What do you predict?
I think we're going to see more and more problems.
You think he's gone?
I think so.
He doesn't own enough of the stock to keep himself there no matter what. Right?
I think the only way he could do it would be to take himself private. But I don't think he has, from what I can understand, he doesn't have the means to do that.
Okay. So he's out at some point.
I think he's got to be. I think we will continue to see headlines about Mr. McClendon for a little while. What he did with the hedge fund was not illegal. What he did with the loans was not illegal.
Some arguments, though, is that, in fact, there was a, let's see here, we had a law professor, I'll see if I can tell you his name, a securities law professor was quoted in a Bloomberg article, Reuters article, about saying that the very existence of the hedge fund could prompt a securities investigation, and there could be some fraud. Where is it? A reasonable investor would want to know that the CEO could be in a situation where he's betting against the interest of the company. That could be considered fraud.
Yeah, it's definitely a terrible thing, and there is no ethical responsibility there.
My prediction is he won't go to jail.
I don't think he'll go to jail.
He'll get booted out. It'll be embarrassing. They'll get in there and they'll find it's all kinds of messy. There'll be a lot of overlap. And the other thing is Chesapeake allegedly at one point was making a bunch of money on trading.
Yeah, I think he's going to be subject to some really heavy fines.
So he'll lose some money. The company will, the other thing that was interesting with Chesapeake is that I know I'm going a little long, Lisa, bear with me. The analysts from SunTrust Robinson Humphrey, they still have a buy rating, and they said that, they know that there's this big fallout from the alleged conflict of interest, but Chesapeake still has one of the best set of petroleum assets in North America. And so if the company simply liquidated its shale assets, that'd be generate between $30 to $35 per share after paying off all the debt. So the worth of the company, it may be trading at $16-$17, but you've got some of these analysts looking at not just the company. They're kind of looking past all this noise, and they're looking at the assets and saying, hey, they're worth $35 a share in a liquidation value with nothing else going on.
Yeah, I think if Mr. McClendon steps down, then you start to see some institutional money going back in. But institutional money doesn't want any part of this. And really what the company's worth is what people are willing to spend it. They can break it up any way they want to.
You're right.
But if he steps down and says enough is enough, then that asset is meaningful. Right now, I think he's too much of a drag to make that a valid point.
Oh, good point, Scott. All right, well, we're going to continue to beat this kind of stuff up. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
The following top secret message is ready for declassification.
All right, we're back. Boy, what a lot of crazy stuff today, huh? I know it's, we the little people look at what goes on these big publicly traded companies and these folks that are supposed to be stewards and fiduciaries and responsible and doing what's right for the shareholder. And we look at that and we go, this is just crazy. So it's not a secret that we are frustrated in America with the folks that are supposed to be doing things the right way. The regulators pass laws, and you still see people do what we're seeing with this Chesapeake Energy. And you wonder to yourself, why would I invest when there's these kinds of shenanigans go on? Well, the truth is, there's a lot of good companies. There's a lot of good financial products, a lot of good investments. It's just we hear about these things, and they get talked about. We're guilty of talking about it here on the program, but it's to illuminate just how ridiculous some of this can be. If you've never heard Scott tell the story about the Glacier, the investment company that invested in the Glacier, I'll have him tell it again. It's the most ridiculous thing. And, you know, I mean, just the artificial or speculative nature of some of these things. So what are you to do? Well, one of the other things we're all up against, which is a good thing, but it's also a challenge, is every day it seems like I see new reports on how long the money's got to last. And we've seen this period of time with the stock market going up, going down, being all over the place. I've met with a couple of clients here recently where we're reviewing where they are and where they've been and how they've fared with the economy and how they've fared with their individual accounts. And I'm going to tell you something that I think will be helpful. What I've seen with working with these people, and this isn't slapping myself on the back, but what it is these clients of mine have taken the time to seek out professional advice. They've done their homework. They've evaluated. They've interviewed advisors. Some of my best clients have come to me after interviewing us and other financial advisors. I think that's smart. That's what I would do. If I were going to hire somebody to manage my money, I'd talk to a couple people. And they've listened to the soundness, the wisdom of being diversified. Our clients don't try to get rich quick on one investment. We don't have an investment portfolio made up of Apple stock and Chesapeake Energy. I mean, we've got portfolios that may hold hundreds of stocks that are done through mutual funds and professional managers who are managing their little piece. So we need to build a portfolio, and we might put 10 or 20% of the money with a particular type of investment, or we might put 5% with one mutual fund. And that one mutual fund has a focus on, say, large companies or on international companies or on small companies. And that's all they do. And then we monitor them and we make sure they do their job. These are the things you do to do a good job with your money. You've got to have some money invested for long term. Can't all be liquid, because if it's all liquid and it's all available, it may not be able to. You've got to be able to put it out there for a while and let it work for you, but that's money you need to make sure that you don't need tomorrow. So these are the things. And I also have seen people do very well. Again, some of these clients I've met with recently do very well by having this diversification and having money that is safe. You can't bet it all. And if you do, you will get burned. Because when we see, I was kind of kidding with Scott earlier in the program, I said, Scott, when are we going to have a correction? Well, it's not a matter of if, it's when, because historically there have been bull and bear markets. Market goes up, market pulls back. But it's not unusual after what we have seen for the stock market with a strong run to see it pull back 10%. So we're at a little bit north of 13,000 points on the Dow, a little over 1,400 on the S&P 500. If the S&P 500 index were to come down from 1,400 to down into the 1,300s again, or dropped a full 10% back down to, what would that be, 1,260? I wouldn't be surprised. It would not be good, but it's not something that is outside the expectations. These things are going to happen. So you've got to make sure that you're prepared for that. And that's why you don't have all your money invested in the market, unless you are very young and a very long way from retirement. If you're in retirement or you're real close to retirement, you better be diversified and you better not be all in the market unless you have a very unusual and unique situation where, there again, you don't need that money for a long time because you have a big pension and you don't need the money. Otherwise, if you need it soon or you are dependent on it, you better not have it all in the market. Okay, that's all the time we have for today. Thanks.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.
You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe.
to the company store.